It's Saturday, June 19th, 2021, and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adam B. Levine, here again with your weekend story. On today's show, we're heading back to El Salvador for some deeper historical context. Today's episode is sponsored by Interpop, Unique One Network, and Elliptic. And just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Today's episode comes courtesy of CoinDesk's chief insight columnist, David Z. Morris. Boy, did I choose the wrong week to go on vacation. I sure wish it had an overlap with the most significant single development in the history of cryptocurrency so far, the adoption of Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador. Plenty of naysayers have worked to pick apart the move since its announcement and implementation over the past week, and there are certainly many unknowns. Those include the basic logistical challenge posed by exchange rates and Bitcoin's slow and expensive on-chain transactions, with the help of Lightning Network firm Strike. Another major question is whether Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele, who is wildly popular but has made authoritarian moves to consolidate power, is the ideal leader to take this dizzying first step. But those details pale in comparison to the broad outlines. For the first time, a nation has adopted a currency that neither it nor any other single entity controls. This is particularly significant because El Salvador had previously used the US dollar as its sole currency. The dollar will still certainly be widely used in the country, but adding Bitcoin to the picture, in even a limited form, reduces the influence of the US and other rich countries. The backlash from establishment figures in the US and Europe has been somewhat muted, but obvious. You can absolutely smell the fear. For instance, former President Donald Trump on Monday responded to the plan by saying, "Bitcoin, it just seems like a scam. I don't like it because it's another currency competing against the dollar. I want the dollar to be the currency of the world. That's what I've always said," end quote. Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, without referencing El Salvador directly, also chose the moment to attack cryptocurrency broadly. "The use of the dollar as a global medium of exchange and savings provides huge benefits to the U.S., and losing that dominance, whether to Bitcoin or the yuan, would have major negative impacts on the U.S. domestic economy. It's a fear that few U.S. leaders have articulated so explicitly with regard to Bitcoin. But Trump, for better or worse, has a gift for saying out loud what a lot of other people are thinking." The U.S. isn't the only one signaling anxiety over El Salvador's move. The International Monetary Fund chimed in Thursday morning, saying El Salvador's plan raises a number of macroeconomic, financial, and legal issues that require very careful analysis, end quote. This may sound bland enough, but when you recognize that the IMF is effectively a tool of economic coercion used by rich northern nations to bully developing nations in the global south, it takes on an ominous tone. At the same time, Bitcoin skeptics have latched on to the idea that 39-year-old Bukele is a nascent authoritarian. Bukele has indeed taken significant steps to weaken checks on his power, including firing judges and anti-corruption officials. The U.S. has also accused several of Bukele's allies of corruption. Salvadorans nonetheless apparently adore their president, who has a steady approval rating near 90%, likely because they understand his actions in the context of El Salvador's messy and bleak political history. At the same time, the legacy of U.S. engagement in Latin America and El Salvador specifically provides plenty of reasons to be skeptical of attempts to delegitimize the democratically elected president. Let's tackle the International Monetary Fund first. The IMF, which is dominated by advanced economies and consistently headed by Europeans, makes loans to developing countries in economic or financial crisis. Though founded with high ideals, since the 1970s, the IMF has used these loans as a coercive tool to advance first world interests as part of a neoliberal strategy that Naomi Klein termed the shock doctrine. The IMF has consistently tied its emergency loans to drastic economic reforms that usually amount to brutal austerity for working people and free rein for international, read mostly American and European, corporations. It was without hyperbole that one repentant development bank operative titled his best-selling 2004 expose, "Confessions of an Economic Hitman." There has been fierce criticism of the IMF for more than two decades, but it has stubbornly stayed the course. In 2019, when Ecuador was in a severe economic slowdown, the IMF stepped in to loan it $4.2 billion. In exchange for that truly insulting pittance, the IMF demanded modernization policies that included privatizing public assets, stripping worker protections, and cutting public spending by 6% over 3 years. The IMF knew and acknowledged these spending cuts would send Ecuador into a recession, increasing unemployment and poverty. The most recent World Bank data on Ecuador's economy is from 2019, so it's still unclear on how things played out in this case. But one can guess intentionally triggering a recession just before the coronavirus pandemic was not ideal. The same rapacious policies have been deployed, usually in a cookie-cutter fashion with little flexibility depending on local conditions, in dozens of developing countries. Under the most repulsive of these provisions, the IMF even prohibited some countries from providing free education to children in the name of fiscal discipline. The IMF argues these vampire reforms produce long-term growth, but even if that's true, they inflict huge costs in both national sovereignty and global stability. In the most notorious example, it's widely believed IMF bailout packages worsened the 1997 Asian financial crisis, because the agreements made it impossible for nations to stem short-term capital flight. This is the version of events laid out not in some radical political broadsheet, but in the Encyclopedia Britannica. The contagion eventually spread as far as Brazil and Russia. You can begin to see why the IMF might regard a developing nation's adoption of an independent currency system as deserving of very careful analysis, as the spokesperson put it. For one thing, at least some of the pressures it's able to exert on behalf of its Euro-American masters is based on their control of the global banking system, which Bitcoin can bypass. And good heavens, let's hope no developing nation so much as thinks about decentralized finance, better known as DeFi, the next time they need a loan. That would just be awful. Remember all the hoops Ecuador jumped through for that $4.2 billion? The total capital on DeFi systems today is $59.4 billion. It's not a great leap to imagine a future in which the IMF is no longer the lender of last resort for countries in crisis. They can borrow directly from the rest of us without submitting to destructive anti-human reforms.
Meet Interpop, a super team redefining the future of NFTs and fandom. From comics and trading card games to digital collectibles and everything in between, they are building the architecture of an entirely new landscape of fandom using technology built on the Tezos blockchain to drive their vision. Visit HelloInterpop.io to learn more. That's HelloInterpop.io to learn more. There's so many blockchains and NFT marketplaces these days, and none of them work together. Introducing Unique One Network, a multi-chain interoperable platform for DeFi-enabled NFT marketplaces. Powered by Polkadot, Unique One Network's cross-chain NFT hub lets you service NFT creators, investors, collectors, and traders across art, photography, philanthropy, gaming, finance, and more. So do yourself a favor and head over to Unique One Network now to learn more. Introducing Elliptic, the preferred crypto compliance partner for businesses who want to grow with confidence. The busiest compliance teams rely on Elliptic's rigorous blockchain monitoring solutions to scale up and save money. Protect your customers. Manage your risk. Scale your business. Visit elliptic.co to talk to a crypto compliance expert today. That's Elliptic, ELLIPTIC.co.
The questions of Bukele's authoritarianism is much less clear-cut. Some of his actions, including handing more power to the Salvadoran military at the expense of civilian institutions, have certainly been worrisome. But again, the broader context is crucial. Bukele began his political career as a member of the Farabundo Marti National Liberation Front, a party that grew out of a leftist guerrilla movement after the 1992 end of the country's 12-year civil war. The FMLN was supported by the Soviet Union in its fight against a right-wing Salvadoran military regime, which regularly deployed paramilitary death squads to execute and terrorize citizens. And here, prepare to be shocked, the Salvadoran regime's campaign of terroristic repression was supported by $1 to $2 million in aid per day from the United States of America. Such funding was part of the U.S. Cold War policy of using developing nations as proxy battlefields against the Soviet Union. Over 75,000 Salvadorans died in the conflict between 1980 and 1992, many of them civilians, including six Jesuit priests murdered by U.S.-backed forces. Across Latin America, the mindset behind such policies has lingered, even with no USSR to fight. The U.S. has used innumerable brutal, cruel, and devious tactics to interfere with and depose democratically elected left-wing politicians, especially, it seems, those most beloved by their citizens. This is ongoing today. The U.S., and particularly the CIA, are known to have actively participated in the 2019 coup against Evo Morales, the democratically elected and hugely popular leftist leader of Bolivia. Morales, Bolivia's first indigenous chief executive, was also a stunningly effective economic planner, dramatically cutting poverty and raising the standard of living in his country. Frankly, he is lucky to be alive. Even more egregious is recent reporting indicating the CIA was an active player in the so-called Lavo Jato operation in Brazil. While officially framed as an anti-corruption campaign, many observers say Lavo Jato was also effectively a coup. this time against President Luis Inácio Lula da Silva, who remains extremely popular, with approval ratings over 80% years after being deposed for supposed corruption. Lavo Jato led directly to the empowerment of Bolsonaro, a far-right ideologue who it does not seem unfair to describe as completely unhinged. Bolsonaro's policies on everything from the Amazon rainforest to the coronavirus pandemic have done grievous harm to the Brazilian people, the Brazilian economy, and the global environment. So Bukele's resistance to anti-corruption measures should be seen in this grim context. In Latin America, anti-corruption is too often code for an American plot to overthrow your government. Bukele himself seemed to hint at this in his response to some of the corruption allegations, when he snarkily expressed shock that the investigation did not find a single case of corruption in the right-wing Arena party that opposes him. And these are just two horrifying recent examples. The U.S. has violently intervened in the domestic policies of Latin American countries at least 14 times since the beginning of the 20th century, according to a tally by the Associated Press. The term banana republic derives from America's old habit of knocking over governments for the benefit of fruit companies, including the one now known as Chiquita Brands International. These various operations frequently involve the use of secret death squads, including the Contras in Nicaragua, whose operations were allegedly funded by the CIA's direct involvement in international drug smuggling. Again, you can see why a left-wing South American president might look for ways to reduce his country's dependence on the U.S. dollar and the U.S.-controlled financial system. While death squads never go out of fashion, the increasing internationalization of banking and finance has added a subtler weapon to the imperialist arsenal. Adopting Bitcoin is a first step towards loosening that death grip. Bukele is not emphasizing this angle, and if you are in his shoes, would you? But you can bet it's very much on his mind. Furthermore, you can bet your bottom dollar that other leaders of the developing nations are thinking the same thing, and at the very least, watching to see how El Salvador's move plays out in the coming months and years. If it works to even a limited degree, they have every incentive to follow suit. Much attention has been focused on direct economic benefits that may accrue in El Salvador from its move towards Bitcoin, such as attracting more tech talent and investment, and those could wind up being compelling in themselves. But the real upside might be the one that few dare say out loud. Used intelligently, Bitcoin could be a significant tool for entire nations that want to shake off the yoke of rich, shameless northern bullies that have cost them so much. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another weekend story. And just a reminder that CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice.